Hello, everybody. This is our Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 38. It just so happens that number 37 had to be cut short at about 30 minutes. I've been having some trouble with technical issues, so there are a few of the adventures in the last several, which are not the full hour in duration. But this will give an opportunity to deal with some important matters which heretofore I've not been able to discuss with the thoroughness I would like to. I will begin, we're talking about the 7 and the 5. A steady recollection of the 12 basic energies, 5 major and 7 minor, which are in reality, and apart from the astral reversion due to the great illusion, 7 major and 5 minor will be of value. Well, as I was saying, sometimes it seems that 5 are major. We have the 5 liberated creative hierarchies and the 7 minor. And we have other instances in which the five superior subplanes are filled with life and are counted as important for a plane, whereas the 2 lower subplanes are entirely receptive. We have instances of the domination of the 5 over the 7. The creative hierarchies is probably the major one. This is 5 major out of the 12 and 7 minor. But, as DK says, there is an astral reversion. It is a reverse type of perception, and there are really 7 major and 5 minor. Now, these 12 energies, whether we consider them 7 and 5 or 5 and 7, work out into human expression via the lords of the 12 signs. The lords of the 12 signs, and indeed there are lords of 12 signs, although he might well have said lords of the 12 constellations, especially so. Lords of the 12 signs, and the 12 planetary, 12 planetary rulers. These 12 basic energies emanate from 3 sources. These 12 basic energies emanate from the 7 stars of the Great Bear, which is the Father aspect, transmitted through the 7 stars of the Little Bear, which is the Sun, S-O-N, aspect. They are the same energies, but they are modified in the Little Bear. So they are 7 principal energies, but they turn out to be 14, as we will see in a later equation. 2 of these 12 come from Sirius, and 3 from the Pleiades. This setup, he says, if I may use such an unorthodox term, will be the condition of the major solar sphere of influence at the end of the great age of Brahma, as it is esoterically called. In the interim or interlude of evolution through which we are passing, and which DK says, which is an inadequate translation of an occult phrase given to a world cycle in this case looks very much like a Mahamanvantara, as I suggested before when looking at the ambiguity of that term. an occult phrase given to the world cycle, to a world cycle in the Master's archives. These energies are stepped down into forces, which are literally 16 all told, from the angle of manifestation. I would, and 16 is a very important number when it comes to manifestation. From the angle of manifestation, I would remind you, and make literally 7 plus 7 plus 2 equals 16 equals 7. In these numbers, the mystery of our evolutionary process lies hid. Well, this is a profound and difficult paragraph. And I cannot say that I can offer any truly definitive interpretation. There are 12 basic energies. They appear to be stellar energies coming from three great constellations, the three superior constellations, as we have sometimes called them. Seven, obviously, come from the Great Bear, and these seven are transmitted through and modified by, presumably, the Little Bear. We will have to study the stars of the Little Bear carefully in order to see which of the seven in the Great Bear are transmitted through a particular seven in the Little Bear. Is Polaris one of those stars in the Little Bear? Because, after all, it is the end of the tail of the Little Bear. Probably Thuban, or Thuban, having to do with the guarding of treasure, is one of the stars. And there are a number of lesser-known stars than the Little Bear, each one of which should be correlated with one of the seven rays and receive the energy from one of the major stars of the Great Bear. Two of these energies are coming from Sirius, three from the Pleiades, and that makes 12. Well, you know, we are dealing, interestingly, with the constellations of the zodiac, which are said to be the 12 major petals in the major center, the 12 petals in the major head center of the great super constellational logos called the One About Whom Naught May Be Said. So there is a major 12 petal lotus in the head, and as far as the head center is concerned, it is the major center, and the constellations of the zodiac fill in those 12 force fields. They are very powerful in the system, it would seem, and the energies of the Great Bear have to do with the seven head centers in the One About Whom Naught May Be Said, and are therefore, in a sense, in a lesser position. We have to hierarchicalize the head center. We know that when it comes to the analogy in man, if we turn to A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 170, we will see that the seven head centers, here they are, in spiritual man to the third initiation, are hierarchically in of lesser status than the two many-petaled lotuses, which presumably are the Ajna center and the thousand-petaled lotus. That being the case, if the Great Bear represents the seven head centers in the One About Whom Naught May Be Said, then the many-petaled lotuses, Ajna and especially the head center, are hierarchically superior. In which case, we could look at the constellations of the zodiac as being, in a sense, each of them hierarchically superior to each one of the seven stars of the Great Bear. And yet, Interestingly, when we turn to a chart in esoteric astrology on page 610, probably, and 11, that's the wrong one. There we go. 610. We see that one of the stars in the Great Bear seems to be hierarchically superior to three zodiacal constellations, at least in this Dorje-like figure. Whatever force center is in the highest position is considered to be the emanating source, and it is called transcending rather than transmitting. So I think you can see the problem here about the status of the signs of the zodiac, or the constellations of the zodiac, relative to each of the stars of the Great Bear. Now, here's a question. Can each of the stars of the Great Bear actually be a blind or stand for a still greater ray constellation? For instance, can the first ray star of the Great Bear stand for the entire Great Bear? Can the third ray star of the Great Bear stand for the Pleiades as a whole? This is a question, because the question of actual magnitudes of power comes into consideration, and it is not easy to solve, because often there are apparent reversals in magnitude. These can be used as blinds. It is difficult to see how one particular star in the Great Bear can be more powerful than all the stars in three great constellations, such as Aries, Leo, and Capricorn. So sometimes a part is used as a blind for a whole. And that is the case, for instance, with the star Betelgeuse, or Betelgeuse, however we can pronounce it, which is often a blind for the entire constellation of Orion. It might be, for instance, if we consider the rays of Orion, one of which may be ray 6, but another of which may be ray 2, because constellations 2 have a number of major rays associated with their major aspects. If we consider the second ray star of the Great Bear, Mizar, M-I-Z-A-R, to represent a greater constellation, that constellation might be Orion as a whole. And then perhaps we can understand how such a great constellation could work through three zodiacal constellations. They would be then Gemini, which is very close to Orion, Virgo, and Pisces. These are simply speculations. They are offered in the to help clarify the task, the problem, or the task of finding the relative magnitudes. So I consider this issue to be unresolved, because in a way the lotuses in the major head center of any being could be considered more powerful than the lesser centers, lower, shall we say, in that energy system. Well, when it comes to trying to discover the correlation of the 12 planetary logoi, 7 major and 5 minor, or non-sacred, 7 sacred and 5 non-sacred, with these 12 emanating energies, whether they are actually from stars or whether they are from still superior constellations, we can correlate the seven sacred planets with the seven major rays emanating from the Great Bear. The Great Bear as a whole seems to transmit the will aspect of the rays. Maybe it is so that the seven Pleiades transmit the intelligence aspect, and the constellation Sirius, or more likely, I would say, excuse me, I seem to be on my microphone. Okay. Now I'm not anymore. All right. the seven stars of the Little Bear may well transmit the soul aspect of the rays. So 21 in all, and three different aspects. But we should correlate these 12 energies with the 12 planets. Now, it's always been fairly easy to correlate seven planetary logoi with the seven stars of the Great Bear. And it seems to me that the seven planetary logoi should be the seven sacred planetary logoi, probably in relation to their soul rays rather than their monadic ray, although ultimately it could be the monadic ray. But in any case, the sacred planets would have a correlation each with one of the stars of the Great Bear. Benet Nash Al-Kaid, first ray star of the Great Bear, could correlate with Vulcan. Mizar with Jupiter, that's the second ray star. Alioth, the third ray star in the Great Bear, could correlate with Saturn. Megrez, the fourth ray star, could correlate with Mercury. Notice I'm using the soul rays of the planets. Dubhe, fifth ray star, could correlate with Venus. Merak, sixth ray star, could correlate with Neptune. And Phegda, the seventh ray star, could correlate with Uranus. Now, if we were dealing with monadic rays of the planet, which have to be somewhat speculative in some cases, then Al-Kaid, or Benet Nash, the first ray star, would relate to Uranus monadically, a first ray monad. And Mizar would relate to Neptune, a second ray monad. And Alioth, again, would relate to Saturn, a third ray monad. Then we get to the question of whether monadic rays, major monadic rays, can be 4, 5, 6, or 7. Well, maybe they cannot, but subsidiary monadic rays, which do exist, can be 4, 5, 6, or 7. So perhaps the star Megrez, fourth ray star, would relate to Vulcan, fourth ray monad. Perhaps Dubhe would relate to Mercury, a subsidiary fifth-ray monad. Perhaps Merak would relate to Venus, a subsidiary sixth-ray monad. And when we're looking for the seventh-ray monad, we only have Jupiter remaining, and Jupiter does have much within it connected to the seventh ray, so perhaps Phegda would relate monadically to Jupiter. But now, here's the thing. When we're dealing with the rays of these stars, which type of ray are we dealing with? The seven stars of the Great Bear. Are they soul rays or are they monadic rays? Any star which has passed its fourth initiation or fifth, could manifest a Maya Virupa. The idea of stellar Maya Virupas is really interesting. And These Maya Varupas would be generated at a point when the being generating them would be working very much from the monadic level, or at least the monadic level would have a strong influence. But for the moment, we just have to take it at face value that each one of the seven stars, major stars of the Great Bear, has a particular ray, and we are not in a position to determine which ray it is, whether personality ray, doubtful, or soul, or monadic ray. So these seven sacred planets then would be correlated with the Great Bear and also with the Little Bear, because we have the father and son aspect of the same rays. Two of them would come from Sirius, and when we think about Sirius, I think the sun and the moon would be important, quote-unquote, non-sacred planets to be associated there. We have actually, with respect to the constellation Sirius, considering it as more than one star, we have Sirius A and Sirius B. And Sirius A in Egyptian mythology, my wife Tuya has done some research on this, Sirius A correlates with the fifth initiation, Sirius B, Sirius Black, for those of you who are into Harry Potter, correlates with the fourth initiation. So we have the light and the dark, and the sun and the moon seem very good symbols for that, and we would be dealing then with the non-sacred planets which are veiled by the sun and the moon as related to Sirius. Now, these are correlations, you know, attempting to correlate the 12 planets with the three major sources from which respectively 7, 2, and 3 energies emanate. There's a lot more that could be said, but certainly Sirius and the sun are very closely related. This we know because Sirius, the logos of Sirius, is considered to be the initiator of our solar logos and active in our solar system as an initiator on a great scale. And the sun is ruled by Leo, and there is a very important triangle of Sirius, Leo, Jupiter. So we see how those energies do correlate on the basis of similarity. As for the moon, you know, Sirius is sending forth, in a way, the fifth creative hierarchy. It is a source which has much of the fifth ray in it. The fifth creative hierarchy is dual, we remember. One part of it relating to the human personality, and the other part relating to the solar angelic part of man. And I believe that those two parts of the fifth creative hierarchy, using it in a way as a symbol for Sirius, correlate very well with the sun and the moon. The moon correlating with the mental elemental aspect of that fifth creative hierarchy, or with, as it says, the human personality, the crocodiles, the lower Makara, and the sun correlating with the higher aspect, the solar angelic aspect. So I think the sun and the moon are very good planetary representatives for the two energies, two major energies, which come from Sirius. Although, as I said, you know, when I'm dealing with stars in a superior position to great constellations, I am looking for a blind. I'm looking for what those stars really represent, constellations which those stars really might represent. When it comes to the Pleiades, they have very much to do with matter and mind. This is considering the Pleiades as they are normally considered, and not as the source of cosmic buddhi, because the Pleiades is a great constellation with a number of rays, and not simply the third ray or the ray of matter and mind. And yet the Pleiades, we are told, confers Manus to the heavenly men, or the planetary Logoi, just the way Sirius confers Manus or stimulates Manus in the solar Logos. Let's just say that the Pleiades are active in the bestowal of Manus to the heavenly men. There's a, I have to study that carefully, but there is a kind of a tricky wording there, so that the high status of the Pleiades is preserved. It's not really lower than Sirius at all. Sirius, the Lord of Sirius, whatever that is a subset of the Lord of the Pleiades. Anyway, in its matter aspect, or related to its matter aspect, three non-sacred planets are all that remain, and they quite logically hold their place in relation to the Pleiades, and those are Earth, Mars, and Pluto. For Earth and Mars, we can make a very good case, because the relationship of Earth to the Pleiades, and especially one of the Pleiades, perhaps Maia, is long established in mythology. One of the Pleiades married a mortal. That mortal was the non-sacred Earth, and therefore she hid her face in shame, which means that there is some condition in relation to that star which seems to veil or obscure it. It has to do with the third aspect of divinity. As far as I'm just thinking here. You know, the one about whom naught may be said. Well, the Lord of the Pleiades is probably the Lord which uses the Pleiades as its central source, like the solar Logos uses the sun as the central source. He is probably that Lord which is called the one about whom naught may be said. And I think rays 3, 2, and 1 are involved in this Pleiadian manifestation. Certainly 3 and 2, and since it's the hub of the wheel, ray 1 may be there as well. There may be quite a similarity between the rays of the Earth and the rays of the Pleiades. The rays of the Earth are monadic 1, soul 2, personality 3. Well, I think the 3, 2, 1 are there in the Pleiades, but the order there, I think, cannot be ascertained, which is in the soul ray position for the Pleiades, which is the outer ray, and which is the deep inner ray. But 3, 2, and 1, I think, are involved. Well, anyway, Mars is closely involved because the Pleiades are said to be the nursemaids, or the nurses, of the god of war, which is Mars. See, Pleiades have much to do with the matter aspect, and these three non-sacred planets do very much represent the matter aspect. Below the diaphragm, they could represent the base of the spine center, Pluto, which also has a connection, as we've seen, with the solar plexus, the spleen, Earth, and Mars, sacral and or solar plexus. So we're probably leaving Venus out of the picture, because Venus is probably the solar plexus at this time of the solar Logos. But anyway, Mars, Pluto, and Earth are sub-diaphragmatic planets in the solar Logos, and also in man rule sub-diaphragmatic centers. The Earth does rule the throat center of the average man, but it also has much to do with the spleen along with the sun. Mars, we are told, rules the solar plexus of average man, but it is sacral, I think, in relation to the solar Logos. Suffice it to say, the Pleiades, with all their emphasis upon matter, are well fitted to express not only, but at least, through those three non-sacred planets. So I think the planetary lineup is pretty good with the 7, 2, and 3. Sirius and the Pleiades, I think, correlating with non-sacred planets and the Great Bear with sacred planets. Now, we come to the big issue of the 12 signs. The 12 signs are also here. And one gets the impression that there must be a correlation of these major stars with the 12 signs. How shall we go about doing that? Well, we how shall we keep how shall we keep the particular greater constellation correlated with only one of the signs? In other words, how shall we keep a star within a particular constellation correlated with only one of the signs? There are seven major stars in the Great Bear, presumably correlated with one of the seven zodiacal constellations. Two energies in Sirius, presumably correlated with two of the zodiacal constellations, and the three energies of the Pleiades, presumably correlated with three zodiacal constellations. This is difficult, because, you know, on page 50 of this book, we are at least given two constellations each for Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades. I added another one, and then DK talked about how all of that vectors out. There are three great vectors. The first ray vector working through Leo, the second ray through Pisces, and the third ray through Capricorn. But when it comes to correlating one of the 12 basic energies each with one of the signs of the zodiac or one of the constellations, that is more difficult. And I could try to work something out there, but I'm not really going to attempt to hazard too much of a guess. When you think about Taurus, Cancer, and Virgo, they are very connected with the Pleiades, for sure. Now, of course, one way of doing this is simply to take the ray of the star concerned and relate it to the constellation. For instance, there is a first ray star in the Great Bear. We could simply relate it to the major first ray constellation, which is Aries. We could take the second ray star and relate it to the major at this time second ray constellation, Virgo. We could take the third ray star and relate it, let us say, to the sign Cancer, which for the mass brings in the third ray particularly. The fourth ray star could be related to Scorpio, which at this time is the major expression of the fourth ray. The fifth ray star could be related to Leo, but you see the problem is Leo is giving way to Aquarius in terms of the transmission of the fifth ray, so the problem of mutation enters here. The sixth ray star Merik could be associated with Sagittarius, although usually it's associated with Aries from a different perspective. And the seventh ray star could be associated with Capricorn. All right, that would be one way of doing it, because DK has told us the constellations through which the seven rays majorly express at this time. For instance, we have Aries, Leo, and Capricorn for the first ray, but the major expression of the first ray at this time is through Aries. Now, the triangle might rotate, and at another time the major expression could be through Leo or Capricorn, and that's the problem. So I don't know if we can find any hard and fast connection here. Maybe we can find a connection between these 12 basic energies and the constellations at this time. For instance, Leo is very connected with Sirius, and the Sirian festival every year is associated with the full moon in Leo, and it's celebrated at that time. And maybe One of those potencies, let's call it the sun potency, of the two potencies that come through Sirius, could be connected with Leo. What then would the moon potency be connected with? Leo is the fire sign of consciousness, so of the three fire signs, it carries the second ray aspect, even though that particular ray is not transmitted through it. When it comes to the moon, shall we focus on the fourth ray for the veiled planet there? And if we did, would we look at one of the fourth ray signs? The only one that would be left to deal with is Taurus, but then that may be used already by the Pleiades. So I think you can see the problem here. We get into a kind of a speculation, and we get into the idea that there are 36 factors. Let me put that down. 36 factors. Okay. Let me just put that in. 36 factors. What are these 36 factors? They are 7 great stars, 3 and 2, 12 great stars, 7 from the Great Bear, 3 from Pleiades, 2 from Sirius. Then there are 12 signs of the zodiac, and 12 planets, 7 sacred, 5 non-sacred. That's 36. Okay. Those 36 factors are hierarchicalized, so that the stars seem to occur in the superior position, the zodiacal constellations next in order, relating to the soul, just as the stars probably relate to the spirit aspect, and then come the 12 of the planets, which archetypally relate to the personality aspect, at least in this setup. The 36 gives us the 9 of a completed system. Okay, so what I've tried to do here is kind of outline the picture that we are trying to create and point to the major 12 as 12 stars, which may well be representatives of 12 greater sources. Not sure what they are, of course. But I'm one of those people that tries to stick strictly to magnitude. In other words, I assume the Buddha's aura is bigger than my own. If it expands miles, it can be noticed as expanding miles. In other words, its display, its type of expression is equivalent to the inner power of the Buddha's being and consciousness. I assume this same to be true for stars. If you have an incredibly brilliant star, it is likely that the being behind it is a very powerful being. Now, of course, there is one factor that enters, because when you look at the chakra system at man, sometimes, let's say, the solar plexus is totally radiant and the heart is not. And that has to do, even though the heart is the superior center, it hasn't reached the developmental phase when its radiance will show. Perhaps at that time, the solar plexus area will have dimmed down. And the being behind or embodying the solar plexus is really a lesser being than the being embodying the heart, even though at a particular time that being of the solar plexus seems more radiant. So there is a relativity here which one has to keep in mind. But in general, if I see a bright aura in a human being, a great radiant halo and extensive radiation, I'm going to assume that that being has power and great consciousness. And in general, it is so with stars. If I see a brown dwarf star or a red dwarf star, I'm going to assume that the being who embodies that star is of lesser scope than a being that embodies a star like one of the three stars in the belt of Orion. Alnilam, Alnitak, Altak, and Mintaka. Those three stars are so brilliant, they're hundreds of thousands times brighter than the sun. I'm going to assume that a being in back of them is a stupendous life when compared to the being of our sun. It would not make sense to me to put it the other way around. It would be very, should we say, in a way, heliocentric. And we have to overcome not only our geocentricity, but our heliocentricity. All right, well, I've laid out some thoughts here which certainly bewilder me, so I hope they do the same for you. Okay, this setup, if I may use such an unorthodox term, will be the condition of the major solar sphere, which presumably is the ring pass knot spherically of our solar logos at the end of the great age of Brahma. The relationships between the 36 will be very well defined and very clearly understood, as they are not completely so at the moment. The 12 planets, five of which are non-sacred, all of them, I presume, will be sacred. And when I look at the constellations of the zodiac, I don't for a minute think that the law of seven sacred and five non-sacred will be breached. I believe there will be, at the moment, there are seven sacred and five non-sacred, or should we say the constellations of the zodiac are unevenly developed. But I do think that even the ones that are non-sacred now, even though they may hierarchically maintain their lesser status when compared with the greater seven, that they will be sacred too. And there may be stars, I'm not sure about this, but stars within the greater 12 of the Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, some stars of which are still, in their own initiatory scheme, non-sacred, and they will probably be sacred as well. But by the end of the great age of Brahma, 311 trillion 40 billion years, there will be a very clear lineup between the 36 factors here mentioned. And we still have perhaps more than 150 trillion years to run in the manifestation of our second major solar system by our second ray solar logos. That doesn't mean it'll all take place on the physical plane. There are higher planes in relation to which the solar system can be said to function, and perhaps the physical plane will disappear altogether. The word world cycle, as I said, you know, it might mean one precessional age, a platonic age of 25,000 years. That's unlikely. But it can easily mean a round of some hundreds of millions of years. Or it can mean a scheme round, which is a still vaster period of time. But the word world is a generic word, and even the universe is considered the world in a way. And so is our solar system. So a world cycle might be one entire Maha Manvantara. It's an ambiguous word that DK can use in order to somewhat disguise the specific truth from us. Anyway, in the interim of evolution, which is the duration of a world cycle, which ultimately is a Mahamanvantara, the energies which we've been talking about, these energies are stepped down toward 16 in all. Now, are we talking about the 36 energies or the 12? We do have an analogy in the Egoic Lotus, which is a heart center. It's in the line of heart centers, as we have discussed. We have the 12-petaled human heart center, the 12-petaled heart in the head, then we have the 12-petaled egoic lotus, and we would assume the monad has petals too, but the number of them still has to be determined. Could be 12, could be 16. When we can use the egoic lotus as an analogy, because it has, strictly speaking, 16 parts. It's a kind of a throat center in a way. It's kind of the expression of the word. The word comes from the throat, which has 16 petals. It's a heart center, and so when we think of it as 12-petal lotus, but if we see that it has drawn one aspect from a superior world, that is, from the world of the monad, it has drawn the jewel and the lotus, and from the inferior worlds, it has drawn the three constituents of the atomic triangle, the mental unit, astral permanent atom, mental permanent atom. Add those all together, you get 16. So that is one example, at least, of how the 12, which is the heart, can, in manifestation, which is related to the throat center being a third-ray, seventh-ray center in a way, when it's ruled by Uranus, seventh-ray, that throat can be the manifestation of the heart. So the 12 of the heart can become the 16 of the throat in manifestation. And the love must be expressed through intelligence and the word and in manifestation, which is very close to the number 7, because the 16 petals resolve to 7. So it shows the throat center to be a center of manifestation. So we are looking at the number 16, but the way the Tibetan derives the 16 is different. He derives them with a 7 plus 7 plus 2 equals 16 equals 7. Well, in terms of what he has mentioned in this little section, there are 7 from the Great Bear, 7 energies from the Little Bear, that's 14 altogether, plus 2 from Sirius. We have Great Bear, Little Bear, Sirius equals 16 equals 7. So we see that 16 is truly a number of manifestation. And when you think about 16 and you interpret it in a different way, you have the 1 surrounded by the 6, which is what we find on the cosmic physical plane, or on many different planes. We always find one plane surrounded by 6 planes, and that's the method of its manifestation. All the 6 are deriving from the power of the 1. Now, we have mentioned the 3 energies of the Pleiades, but we haven't added them in, and if we did, we wouldn't get a 7, we'd get a 19. 7 Great Bear, 7 Little Bear, 2 Sirius, 3 Pleiades equals 19 equals 1, which points to the centrality of the Pleiades in this setup. So DK says that in these numbers, the mystery of our evolutionary process lies hid. Well, yes, it is hidden. It is deep. We have some hints. We have the idea that our evolutionary process is started from these super constellations. And one almost wants to add the sun into that picture. One wants to see the 3 super constellations, Great Bear, Pleiades, Sirius, or really what I would rather see is Great Bear, Little Bear, Sirius, funneling into... No, that's wrong. That's not what I meant. Great Bear, Little Bear, Pleiades. Okay, that is a great triangle. And DK does talk about the importance of that triangle. Maybe I can find that. He does say that Ursa Minor Major Pleiades, yes. What does he say? These facts contain a great mystery connected with the interrelation of Ursa Major, Ursa Minor, and the Pleiades. They constitute one of the greatest and most important of the triplicities to be found in the heavens, as far as we have astronomically ascertained the nature of our immediate universe. He's leaving open the fact that we do not have complete knowledge at all of our immediate universe. Notice how the word universe is used as an immediate area of space and not as the vast entirety. So anyway, I would like to see a triangle here of Great Bear, Little Bear, Pleiades, yes, funneling through that lesser being, Sirius, really a dwarf star when compared with the greater constellations there, and then funneling through our planetary, our solar logos, five altogether. And as a matter of fact, what could be considered is a setup with the Great Bear, Little Bear Pleiades, working through the constellation of our local cosmic logos, which hypothetically includes the very close star Sirius, along with our Sun and five other major solar logoi within the constellation representing that cosmic logos. Then we would have four super constellations. And, oh yes, think of it. Wow, that would be a really good setup, and it would look exactly like this. I think I've hit on something here, maybe, after all these years, possibly. Look at this tabulation which we have examined. Great Bear, Sirius, Great Bear, Pleiades, and one constellation of magnetic energy called the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Presumably, we can include seven stars in that system. Should Sirius be included and do double duty? I'm not sure. But certainly, seven stars can be included there. And they will be a magnetic constellation in relation to three great constellations. And what I'd like to do for the three great constellations, I would like to substitute the Little Bear for Sirius. Both of them, I think, have a strong kind of Agena center connection, and both of them represent the Sun, S-O-N, and both of them represent, therefore, the Christ force. Well, you know, as I have read through this section of the book a number of times over many years, maybe 40 years, something like that, maybe more, I've always been bewildered. And I've never taken the time to intricately look at this section of the book, and have entered now into a greater degree of intricate consideration than heretofore. But we must not discount the power of the Little Bear. He doesn't say much about it, but I do think it is a kind of higher prototype to Sirius in a way. And often when Sirius is mentioned, I think it is the Little Bear which should be receiving attention. In any case, in this particular paragraph, we do have Great Bear, Little Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, the major sources in our local cosmos system. If we exclude the energies from the Pleiades, we get seven, and if we include them, we get 19 or 1. 1 plus 9 is 10 or 1. So we have the 1 and 7. We have the sources which account for the structural nature of our local cosmos system. And I think, it makes sense that the 12 can manifest as a 16. Now, interestingly enough, if it was 36 manifesting as 16, that would make sense too, because we'd have the 36, which would be the 9. The 9 being the number of the third aspect, and then we would have the 7 from the 16, and the 7 being the number of manifestations. So we'd have the relationship of the 3 and the seven. Nine being the number which represents the three and the seven. But from another point of view, well, all right, 36 is 9 and 7 is 16 is 7. So we keep on coming to the idea of the third aspect and manifestation. I know we have to be careful with numerology because it might be easy to make it say anything. But in this particular case, DK is working with numerology for a specific reason. He's talking about the manifestation, which involves the third aspect and the number seven, of the sun, or the second aspect, with which the number 12 is associated. 12, Pisces, the heart, the son of God. Whoa! That was a paragraph, and even though Esoteric Astrology 37 began that process, I think pretty much Esoteric Astrology Adventure 38 is there as well. It took a while to get through that paragraph, and I have a feeling that we have only scratched the surface. Let's see here. I seem to have lost. There we go. Okay. Yeah, we are coming to the point where the great invocation can be said. We have just 3 minutes left. I will read the next paragraph, and I'll begin there with 39. Always, however, the emphasis must be laid upon the rays of energy and quality, even when discussing astrology, as they pour through the zodiacal constellations and the planets. So the rays are somehow, in this setup, they represent the spirit aspect. In a treatise on white magic, he did the same. He talked about the seven solar lords being superior to the signs of the zodiac. The new astrology is therefore necessarily based upon an understanding of the rays. In other words, if we want to understand the 12 of astrology, we have to understand the 7 of the rays. And I have, I know what I didn't do. Yes, I wanted to show you the derivation of the 7 from the 12, and I think I'll do that. I think I can include that. And we'll deal with the following tabulation in a bit. But here's the 7 from the 12. Because that's so important when thinking of the preeminence of the 7 of the Great Bear and the 12 of the zodiacal constellations. The 12 creative hierarchies. Students are often puzzled in trying to account for the 12s in cosmos. A correspondent sent in the following suggestion. Remember, the 7 rays derive from the 3. There's A, there's B, there's C. There's AB, AC, and BC. And then ABC in equal measure. But now he's dealing with the 12s. In a study of consciousness, the 3, ABC, by an arrangement of internal groupings, show 7 groups. So this is what I just said. But there is a different way in which we always preserve each of the 3 as we work. ABC, ACB, BCA, BAC, CAB, CBA, and a 7th, a synthesis in which the 3 are equal. They don't have any order, so to speak. None of them is preeminent, all of them is equal. Now that's 6 plus the equal one. A second 6 would be represented by paren AB, then C. C, paren AB. We're using here the principle of ordinality, so that which precedes is considered significant, and that which follows is considered significant. So when we are reversing the ordinality, we have C, paren AB. A, paren BC, BC, paren A. C A paren B, B paren A C. So we have the two bracketed groups being equal, and the third stronger or weaker. So we're talking about relative strengths as we make these combinations. Now we've got two groups of six, and a group in which the three are equal, which would make 13. The 13 may be arranged in a circle of 12, with one in the center, presumably the one in which equality is demonstrated. The central one will be synthetic and will be that class in which all three are equal. The physical correspondence to this will be the 12 signs of the zodiac with the sun at the center synthesizing all of them. Or the spiritual correspondence is the 12 creative hierarchies with the logos at the center. The arrangement is quite legitimate. Okay. This came from the Theosophist, and I would recommend its study on page 1195 of the Treatise on Cosmic Fire, because probably, if we're very careful, we can work out which of the combinations represents the seven rays, and which of the combinations represents each of the 12 signs of the zodiac. It would be a big job, but I think it could be done, and it's maybe something for someone in the new esoteric schools. Coming along. All right. Now we will sound the great invocation. And from the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, that's that. That's that. End of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 38. And we will continue with 39.